Thanks everyone for joining. It's my honor as a volunteer with the Community Engagement and Learning team to introduce Michelle DiMartino and Dan Lamp. Michelle DiMartino is the founder of Michelle DiMartino and Associates, a boutique organization design and growth strategy firm. And she's the co-author of a book that most of you probably know, Network, Scaled, and Agile, a design strategy for complex organizations. Over her consulting career, Michelle has worked closely with CEOs, executive teams, and boards to develop bespoke organization solutions for companies across a wide range of industries. She was an equity partner with the former Katz Kessler organization prior to its sale to Accenture, where she worked as managing director. As a corporate executive, Michelle served as a CHRO for Intuitive Surgical and has held senior human resource and research leadership positions with iconic firms like Marriott, Ritz-Carlton, and Disney. She's an adjunct professor at NYU on topics like organization design and human resource management, and she lives in Atlanta with her son and pets. Next, we have Dan Lamp. Dan is a global organization design director at Intuitive Surgical, where he leads the organization design COE. In his role, he partners with executives and senior leaders to simplify their organizational complexity and drive scalable solutions that support growth. Previously, Dan consulted with Deloitte, Accenture, and Katz Kessler, where he advised Fortune 500 companies across various sectors. And he has over a decade of deep experience in org design, org effectiveness, and change management. He also has expertise in design thinking and human-centered design, and he and his family hail from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So it's my pleasure to introduce both of them. Excited for the session.
Thank you so much, Brandon and Tanya. Appreciate the warm introduction and Happy New Year, everyone. It's great to see a lot of familiar names on those that are popping into the session today and new names, and appreciate those that reached out to myself and Dan prior to the session today. Please continue to stay in touch. I am in very, very cold Atlanta, Georgia, unusually cold. It's so cold. How cold is it? It's so cold that they actually have not delivered the mail in 2 days, and classes and school has been canceled for 5 days, which is sort of funny to me, I must admit, because I'm from upstate New York, where school only got canceled if you had 2 feet of snow, and we have no snow. We just have cold. But I won't complain. But I do sort of wish my blood's gotten thin after spending some time in Florida. So you do get to be a little delicate after you get accustomed to the warm weather. So I see that there are other people joining from Atlanta, and yes, we do have a real winter this year. Well, I am thrilled to be here with my colleague Dan. Dan and I have had the opportunity to work together at Accenture and at Intuitive. And one of the things we're hoping to bring to the conversation today, well, one, we really hope it's a conversation. So I know there's a lot of people on this webinar. Please do use the chat. And we'll also do some polling to break it up and to get some of your insights as we go through. But one of the things that Dan and I are hoping to do, in addition to having an interactive conversation with you, is to bring our perspectives around developing an org design and effectiveness COE inside of a company from the lens of both having done that as corporate executives and leaders, having built org design and effectiveness COEs and having had to lead them, but also helped our clients do that. So we're hoping that we can share both those perspectives with you as we go through the conversation today. And just interestingly, too, before most of you hopped on, we were just remarking to Brandon and Tanya what a hot topic building internal org design, org effectiveness capability has been with my clients that I've seen over the last 12 months, more so than I could ever remember in my consulting time. So hopefully this is a really timely topic for all of you, and just encourage you to take advantage of the time together. And please don't be shy about following up with myself or Dan afterwards if you just have more questions or want to continue the dialogue. So with that said, what do we want to get done today? We are hoping to share with you some of our thinking around, well, how do you design a fit for purpose or bespoke and sustainable center of expertise in the area of org design and effectiveness? We want to share with you what we've seen as some of the common pitfalls and some tools and frameworks we've used to get in front of those potential pitfalls. Of course, it's not exhaustive, and you probably have some of your own tips and tricks that you've learned, but we hope to share some ideas with you, some best practices that hopefully will give you a head start on hitting the ground running as you develop or strengthening a center of expertise. And then Dan in particular will go into this whole idea of activation. So not just day one initiating your COE, but how do you really get it to perform as intended and to sustain over time? So that's the idea for today. Let's start out though by asking one of Dan's favorite questions. We're gonna use Menti and Dan is gonna help to facilitate that. So what I'd ask you to do is to, on your computer or on your phones, go to menti.com, enter the code 26837060. And this will allow you to participate in the polling that we'll have throughout this webinar. As I mentioned though, we also will be monitoring the chat and we'll either be typing responses or addressing your questions in real time. Dan will monitor for me and I'll monitor for him. So I'll give you a second to go to menti.com on your phone or on your computer. And our very first question of today is going to be, you know, what are you hoping to take away from today's conversation? Dan and I really want to know what your hopes or expectations are for this time together, and we'll help to manage the conversation based on what you tell us. So best practices to sustain OD function, how to help clients set up a COE, real cases. Yep, we can do that. We're going to share some real examples. Augment the experience that you have on this, learn from colleagues, new ideas to help scale expertise, what part of OD is most useful for the business? That's a great question. We are going to talk about that. It's not a one size fits all. The must-haves to establish a COE, we'll hit on that. We may not go as deep on that as you'd like, so I encourage you to follow up at the end of the session with when we have open Q&A if you feel like we haven't answered that question fully, or follow up with Dan or I afterwards. How to use OE org design as a leverage to enhance organizational performance. For sure. Learning best practices for OD, specific tactics and tools. Yes, we will share those. Tried and true practices. Yep, we'll share some of what we've learned. How to measure OD and OE success. I can absolutely share a little bit about that. Great question. And then how to compete with external consultants. Interesting question. I don't know that we're going to hit on that, but I would share this before we go into the session. Interestingly, over time, I could tell you some of my best clients, repeat clients to do, you know, a significant amount of business over a multi-year period. My best clients are those that are really well-informed and have deeper internal knowledge and expertise around the org design space. And I think it's because they are knowledgeable, that they're savvy consumers, and they sort of have a good idea and appreciation for how org design can help to drive performance. But they also know when something's bigger than a bread box and they need external help and an external point of view in addition to their own expertise to solve a business problem. So why don't we kick off with question number one, org design. What is org design? What is org effectiveness? And I want to start out by level setting here. So as we go through the conversation, we don't get confused because we actually are talking to both in our experience, my experience and Dan's. Oftentimes when you're building a COE inside of an organization, it's typically an org effectiveness or org development type of COE. So let me define my terms. When I say organization design, I absolutely am a disciple of Jay Galbraith. And so I automatically think about the STAR model, right? So I think about org design as a systematic way to assess and design organizations through thinking about capabilities, structure, process, metrics in people. So it's the act of designing or redesigning an organization. Organizational effectiveness, the way I'm using the term here throughout the conversation, is really about how do you get an organization, a group of groups, an entire enterprise to perform as intended over time. So high performance over time. Okay. And when we talk about building a COE today, we're talking about both a COE that's capable of designing, assessing, designing organizations, and getting them to perform at a high level over time. If we go on to the next slide, there we go. A couple other just assumptions for our conversation. So we're assuming, for argument's sake today, that we're creating an org design, org effectiveness, COE. It's going to actually be a department within a company. And there's going to be a group of people dedicated to working with that center of expertise. That'll just help with some of the assumptions. And you'll understand a little bit more of a context of where we're going as we get into it. And then the other assumption is that this COE sits within the human resources function. So umbrella function, human resources, and this org design OE COE sits as one department within that function. Okay. So here's what we're going to really dive into today. Dan and I have, through our experience, said we think there's about six big pitfalls that we've seen and some design best practices that we can help to share to help those on the webinar today avoid some of these pitfalls. And in the form of best practices, I'm going to be sharing some frameworks and some tools and some client examples with you as we go throughout the dialogue. So first pitfall, unclear purpose and value, right? So it's unclear exactly what the remit and objective is of the COE. And therefore, as a new entity within a company, others might be looking at and saying, why are you here? What are you trying to do? How are you going to help me? The second pitfall is, good design, wrong fit. Just like when you're designing business divisions or you're designing global functions, you've got to understand the context, the enterprise, the corporate context in which you're designing. And so we'll talk about that, that it's not just about having a good structure, but it's about having an organization design of that COE that really suits the operating model of the corporation. The third pitfall, incomplete definition of work. Maybe just thinking about the work that the folks in the COE do, but what we can't encourage you enough to think about is all of the org design and org effectiveness work of the company doesn't necessarily sit within just the COE. And we've got to be thoughtful about the end-to-end work that also happens in other places. Unaligned partners. Right. So close to that is, if the org design OE work doesn't just sit within the COE, that means there are probably other people you're partnering with too, to help execute that work and really attending to identifying those individuals, those resources, and nurturing partnerships. Fifth pitfall is lack of executive sponsorship. You could have all the brilliant ideas, great minds in organization design and effectiveness working for you. But if you don't have that right executive sponsorship, particularly as you're introducing something new into the company and trying to gain a proverbial seat at the table, it will be really challenging. And the last but not least, insufficient focus on activation. Great, you can design it, but now you want it to perform as intended and how to go about doing that. So that's where we're going to spend our time today on those pitfalls and talking about some best practices. And yes, the deck will be shared today. I assume, Tanya, that'll be part of what you can share with folks when we send out the video. So let's dive in. So starting first with this pitfall of unclear purpose and value. So what we found is that this is sort of a, it's a very simple template, but it's a template we use views consistently with clients, probably over the last 18 or so years in some variation. But it starts first with this idea of getting very clear on what the remit is. Why does this COE exist, right? What value does it add to the company? And think of it a bit as an elevator pitch. It shouldn't take you more than 20 seconds to share why it is that the COE has been brought into being. And I say elevator pitch because pretend you are riding the elevator up in the morning with the CEO of the company, and they want to know what you're working on. You know, you probably have about 20 seconds to tell them about your new COE. What are you going to say, right? Key accountabilities. What outcomes will the COE produce? So try and stay away from activities and get really clear what types of outcomes or contributions you'll be making to the company based on the value proposition that you identified in your remit. It's also helpful to think about what processes will the COE own, maybe none, but some potentially, and thinking about them in terms of, you know, they might be end-to-end processes that traverse many areas across the HR function or across the company in total. But what are those processes that you're ultimately accountable for making sure are designed well and are producing the intended business results? And then lastly, you know, what does great look like? You know, what metrics will you use to evaluate performance? This was one of the questions we got at the top of the session. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here, but one of the things to think about is I love Kirkpatrick's model, you know, the levels of impact and this idea, particularly in the beginning when you're initiating a COE, having people like working with you is actually a pretty good measure. Did the client like working with you? Did they learn something from you? Would they reach out to you again? Do you get repeat business? Do you get referral business inside of the organization? Those are some very valid measures, particularly in the first year or two. Positive word of mouth will be really impactful, and everything you do in the first couple of years will be about establishing your brand. We go into the next slide. I'll dive a little deeper and give you some examples of remit. So there's a couple different flavors of remits, and none of them are wrong, but it's in my experience and Dan's, it's just important that you get really clear on what your intentionality is because it will impact how you design the COE and how you resource the COE, and then certainly how you go about activating and communicating what your services are. So the first flavor is sort of this idea of stop by if you need us. Right? So anyone can access the COE and their thinking. It's really this sort of centralized hub for thought leadership, professional services related to org design and effectiveness. Think of them as, you know, we've got tools, we've got great, you know, maybe access to collateral, good network with org designers outside the company, but anyone can access us. You don't have to be at a certain level of the company or involved in a prioritized project. The second flavor, though, is this idea of a targeted consulting project mission. So when some companies start their COE, they say, you know what, we're going to be really, really focused here, and we only want this precious new resource of our internal org design OE experts to be focused on working with executives on priority strategic initiatives. And so only those business executives that are leading those priorities will have access to this COE. The third flavor is enablement and coaching mission. So it's this idea that the COE ends up being more interfacing with HR professionals and/or business leaders, potentially in other areas of the company and strategy organization or business executives leading divisions. But what they're doing is they're sharing tools and methodologies and frameworks to address, you know, challenges related to human systems and ways of working that drive our business. But they are really set up to be internal consultants. Maybe working on projects, but maybe doing more shadow coaching and sharing tools and resources. through the HR professional organization for HR leaders to then be on the front end of supporting their business executives. And of course, there's several variations, but this gives you an example of why it really is important to be clear about what your remit is, particularly when you get off the ground. Who are you serving and how are you going to be supporting those resources? Salient priorities. It's really, somebody asked, there were actually several questions in our very first poll that asked about a little bit around this idea of, well, how do you determine what your offerings are? And I think one of the most important things that I've learned, having established an internal OE, COE three times over now as an internal leader, is that you really got to be tapped into the business, understand what the business needs are, and be prepared to help meet the business where they are with the problems that they see in front of them. It doesn't mean that you can't and you shouldn't have loftier ambitions for what you want your COE to be able to accomplish and do for the company, let's say 2+ years out. But particularly when you're getting started, you need to be relevant. And so talking to your company executives and understanding what priorities they're facing, what's keeping them up at night, where there are areas of the organization that may be struggling or where you're not set up for growth and where there needs to be some organizational unlock to be able to deliver on the growth plan of the company or even performance failures. So I sort of give you some ideas here of, you know, understanding, you know, are there strategic shifts going on in the corporation? You know, are there known operating challenges? And really keying into those. So getting out there and talking, interviewing some business leaders before you decide what your service offerings are going to look at, and also how you prioritize your service offerings. Again, some things that you might decide to do now, you might have a really short list of service offerings in the beginning, but you can always expand that. It's harder to narrow it down after you've opened Pandora's box. Timely and compelling offerings. So here's just an example, sort of building on what I said, you know, based on what you hear from your listening tour, I think it's about, you know, making sure that you're marketing your wares, so to speak, or communicating the service offerings that you know are going to be most compelling and salient to those business leaders or internal clients, HR leaders, business leaders that you're focused on supporting, right? And so examples of offerings, you know, be things like holistic organizational assessments to get clear on root problems to solve, new or updated organizational structures, governance structure design. So maybe nothing with the vertical structure, but thinking more about how do you support decision-making and clarity around decision rights. Could be maybe you're getting ready or have gone through a divestiture and you're needing to think about, well, what does the retained company look like? Or preparing for a merger and acquisition, and maybe you're going to focus on organization design activities that support due diligence and post-close integration, or process design or job design. So all of these are absolutely offerings that you see in a mature org design OE, COE, not exhaustive. But they may not be the right ones to start out with. Maybe it should just be one or two or three of these in the beginning. So let your listening tour, speaking to your business executives, be your guide there. And think about your brand of OD and OE. And when I say that is, we all come as either internal professionals in the human resources field or organization design or strategy or as external consultants. We all come with our biases and our assumptions, but I think it's really important when you're launching a new COE that you make those transparent. What are those principles that are really gonna guide how you do your work and how you work with your internal clients? And, you know, here's just some examples. And some of these candidly are some of my own personal biases and points of view. It doesn't make them right, but just to give you some salient examples, you know, I firmly believe in my practice and also when I've established internal practices, that business leaders are the experts on their business, and they are the ones that are accountable for making organization design decisions. The org designer is not. The HR business partner is not. It's the business leader that's the decision maker around design choices. You know, also, I have a perspective that I think it's really important to co-design solutions with my clients. And the reason you put these down on paper is these also help to set expectations. Because remember, the many people in the company might not have an opportunity to work with this new COE until they have an org design need. And pretty typically in the first year, you know, maybe you only do 4, 5, 6, 7 projects. So people only know of you in the company based on what you've communicated your purposes, your brand is, how you want to work with your internal clients, what they should expect. This is a way to help make the experience or the potential experience more clear, particularly for those who haven't had a chance to work with you yet. Okay. And remember, this will also serve as a way to really ensure that each interaction, each experience is on brand, which I found to be really important. So when you're building your team for your or design OE, COE, you might start out, as I did at Marriott many, many moons ago, with myself and one other person. But every time we interacted with a business leader or an HR business partner, we had an opportunity to make an impression. And so how are we going to be aligned to these principles for our practice? So think of it as a way to think about how you would train and you would develop your own internal people as well.
Michelle, before we move forward, I'm going to take us back a slide. There's an interesting question that I thought you might want to respond to related to timely and compelling offerings. The question is, are you using governance structure design to mean designing and articulating the operating model?
Governance structure, I am using it as a term that describes a piece of an operating model. So an operating model, the way I define it very broadly, is how are you going to run the corporation, which is a function of some decisions around how will you group work and resources, right? So vertical structure or the organizational model, how closely integrated or separate will you have functions, business divisions, et cetera. But the other element of that is governance. And I use that as sort of an umbrella term for talking about the horizontal organization, or what are the rules of the road for how we are going to work together, how we'll make decisions on a timely basis, what forms we'll use, and where does power sit? So when we are up against certain types of decisions that we have to make on a regular basis, who will have that tipping vote? You know, who will have the right to make the decision when one or more partners involved? Hopefully that clarifies. So governance is a piece of an operating model.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, so I just moved us ahead to the next slide.
So next pitfall, good design, wrong fit. All right, so let's dive into this one. This is actually one of my favorites. You know, we talk about in the book, Networked, Scaled, and Agile, we use this model to talk about there are choices for how enterprises or corporations want to run the company, right? On the very left-hand side, this model speaks to like, hey, we're going to be a fully integrated single business. We're going to have, you know, we're Marriott. We might have 50 different brands. Some are uber luxury, edition hotels all the way down to budget Fairfield Inn, but we're a hotel company. And so we're going to try and do a lot of things together, share a lot of resources, be highly integrated, and set strategy together. And that means that we're going to share typically a lot of common functions, a lot of common technology, a lot of expert resources. We try and share them for the many. And the other end of the spectrum is this idea of being we're going to be a holding company. I don't want my business divisions and units to be connected because at any given point, I might want to sell them off because that's the value proposition, right? So I don't want a lot of integration and commingling of resources and technology and sharing of functions and specialist COEs, et cetera. And the point of this slide, more than anything else, is saying you got to read the room, right? So when you're designing functions and you're designing business divisions and designing COEs, you got to understand what choices or decisions the company has already made about how they want to run the business, right? Because if I try and put a, let's say, a highly center-led, centralized type of COE in place in a holding company, that may not fly, right? It might just be that the organism might get rejected, not because you didn't come up with a great design for the COE, but you chose the wrong type of design for the context of how the company has decided to operate. So if we go to the next slide, I can articulate this, a little bit more. You have choices, though, even within the corporate operating model, you have choices, but some may fit better than others based on the enterprise operating model. One of the options, of course, is on the far left to say, hey, we're going to have a fully consolidated sort of traditional COE, right? We're going to have a leader, we're going to have a dedicated team of people that all report into that leader. And then we'll prioritize the work as it comes in and decide how to, distribute those resources based on projects or priorities or, et cetera. Center-led but distributed COE would say, our team members might be part of two families. They might be a member of the global org design and effectiveness COE, but they also might be co-located sitting in a business division or a geography or another function. And so they're members of two families, really get deep knowledge on the business client that they support, but also be a member of the global COE practice to get best practices. Solid common toolkit, leverage common process, et cetera. And then the other is this idea of, we really just want a capability network. And sometimes, too, when companies start out with building a COE, they want to do a light touch, even if it's, let's say, a highly integrated operating model that the corporation subscribes to. They might say, you know what, we want to do a light touch to begin with. We appreciate maybe we have a lot of people around the company who are doing org design. We don't want to create a highly structured department. We would like people to get together and share best practices. We would like to learn together, and we'd like to maybe have a few things that we decide that we're going to standardize, but we're not going to create a new department. Everybody has a day job, and this might just be part of their day job. Okay. So there are options, and of course, there are variations in between, but some of these options, right, are going to fit better based on what we talked about a second ago. What is the choice of the corporation in terms of how they want to operate the company? And then, of course, once you decide that, then you've got this idea, right, of, well, how do I want to structure, sort of the classic vertical structure. And there are several different options. These are the most common options that Dan and I have seen, this idea of a functional structure or a customer structure or a geographic structure. And oftentimes there's a blend of two, right? Oftentimes you'll see a combination of functional and customer structure or geographic and a functional structure, which is this idea of, we need some really, really deep experts in, org research and analytics or operating models and structure design. But we also want to be very attentive and close to and responsive to our most important clients or our biggest users of org design. And so I also might think about then, aligning to customers or geographies that have the greatest need. And oftentimes, in my experience, it's usually a blend of these two things. However, in the very beginning, it's not unusual for you to just have, a couple of people, one, two, three people when you're starting a COE. So this question of these structural groupings is probably going to go back more so to that one of the very first best practices we shared, which was about salient priorities. So based on your priorities, how can you best align your very scarce resources with the idea that you may have an ambition to grow into one of these structural choices or a hybrid, but it might not be your first step out of the gate. So let's actually just pause here. Good time for a poll. Of the best practices that I just covered, because I just covered a bunch, right? And we were talking about the first two pitfalls, having unclear purpose and value, and how do we create clear remit, priorities, and offerings. And then we also just finished covering the, good design, wrong fit pitfall, and talked about some of the things you need to consider about the context of the operating model of the company, as well as structural choices and design choices. So, out of the things that we just covered, I'd just be interested, Dan, and I would be interested to hear Which of these ideas or best practices do you think could be most helpful to you when building or strengthening your COE internally? Which one resonated with you the most? Defining a clear purpose, okay. Establishing your COE brand. Selecting timely, compelling offerings.
And if it's helpful, folks, Dan put the Menti code and I put the link into the chat for folks who maybe came in a little later than we initially introduced this.
Perfect.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you, Tanya. Really helpful. Great. So it looks like selecting timely and compelling offerings resonated, as well as defining the purpose resonated a lot with folks. And I think where you are on your COE design development activation journey, that makes sense to me, that particularly if you're at the beginning of it, that really is important. Or maybe you've had a false start. You know, we've worked with a number of clients that have tried to launch COEs and, you know, sort of been disappointed in terms of the uptake or the adoption inside the company, or that they've just spread themselves very thin, and therefore maybe not been able to deliver the type of experience that they anticipated. So I really like how you're keying in on selecting timely and compelling offerings as being a really important consideration when you're launching. Great. All right. Why don't we move on to pitfall number three? Oh, sorry. Oh, I have another
second poll here. Yeah.
Another question. I forgot about that. We talked about that, didn't we, Dan? Sorry. In your experience, which structural option has worked the best for COEs that you've led or worked in? So some of you may have some experience or some of you may not, but for those of you that have either worked or led a COE or helped a client, let's say, design and develop a COE, which structural option have you found work best? Hybrid, yeah. That doesn't surprise me. One of the things to think about too, when you're first starting out, like I said, it could be very likely that there's one or two or three resources. And so oftentimes, you really are starting out with, you know, sort of this idea of we've got to choose to be really deep and really expert on a couple of, I'll call it domains within organization design or org effectiveness. So it could be, you know, team effectiveness, it could be process design, and those might be the two areas. So almost what I'm getting at is almost by default, you sort of start out in a functional design. And sometimes in this hybrid design too, by saying, okay, I'm going to provide these expert services to a couple of priority clients or priority projects out of the gate. Good. Thank you for sharing. Appreciate that. Okay. Third pitfall, incomplete definition of the work. So this is where we talk about end-to-end design. And this is something that my dear friends and colleagues, Amy Cates and Greg Kessler talked about in their previous books to Network Scaled and Agile, which is this idea of, you know, really thinking holistically about the work of the function that you're redesigning. And through our work together, you know, this is morphed a little bit, but essentially it's a way of saying, you know what, the work of the COE in this case, there's an element of functional oversight work, right, relative to org design, particularly as you're thinking about your remit and your brand, right? You know, you're going to have a single decision maker, and that will sort of be the brand of org design OE for the company. You've got thought leadership. Hopefully, as you're thinking about, there's going to be work that is really deeply expert designing and selecting the tools and the templates and the frameworks and the methods that you'll use to do your work. And as a COE, that's usually a big part of their responsibility, right? Which is designing and developing a common set of tools, toolkits, setting professional standards. And also, hopefully, when there is a really ugly problem in the company, when you go to the COE, that you're going to be met by people who know more about org design and effectiveness than anybody else in the company, right? Because when you have a bad problem, you want to know that that COE knows more than you do about the issue. Of course, there's, you know, this idea of transactional services. And you might say, well, Michelle, what type of transactional services would sit in an org design and org effectiveness COE? And it depends. It depends on what your remit is and depends what your service offerings are. If you think about org effectiveness very broadly, in some companies that can actually include things like, you know, team interventions, new leader assimilations. And so there are elements of that that actually can be supported in a transaction services organization or classic shared services group. And I'll share that, actually an example for you in a minute. And then there's professional services like, hey, I'm a great org designer, but I'm not a designer and developer of tools and templates and methods. What I like to do and what I do really well is I help to execute. I use the toolkit that my COE gives me and I deliver the heck out of it with my clients. And I'm really good at that, but don't ask me to sit in front of a computer and design and develop a new process or a new methodology. That's not me, right? So there's a delivery aspect of org design, org effectiveness work, right? Getting in front of clients, facilitating problem resolution and designing a new intervention that can be put in place. And then there's also this element of, you know, business partnership. So, you know, as we talked about that hybrid type of design, there's this idea of, you know, sometimes I want somebody who's not only a great, very knowledgeable about org design and org effectiveness, but I also need them to be really knowledgeable about the client group that they're serving. If it's a geography, if it's another function, if it's a business division, and that knowledge is really important. And so oftentimes, of course, classic HR business partners play that type of role. And in many companies, they decide that, you know, HR business partners are going to play a really important role in organizational design or org effectiveness work. And we can talk about that. But what I want you to take away, and I'm going to give you an example of what this, how this plays out, but what I want you to take away from this is not all of the org design and effectiveness work of the company automatically sits within the COE. It may be driven by and informed by the COE, but oftentimes the COE has to work with many other partners to effectively deliver org design, org effectiveness solutions and interventions that are able to be sustained within the company. They need partners. So when we think about that work end to end, here's sort of an example of how it would play out. So if I'm thinking about building my org design COE, I first got to think about, right, well, what's the work? What is the org design or org effectiveness work of the company that we want to have be attended to with the development of this new capability? What do we want to become really good at? And so here's an example of saying, you know what? There's going to be some work that's really functional oversight. We might do it once, we might revisit it annually, but there's going to be a small group of people, maybe even, you know, the HRLT that will make decisions on, well, what is the going to be the ODOE brand? You know, what are the priorities for the COE? We've put our shingle up and now everybody and their sister wants to go to the COE for support. How will we make sure that we can prioritize and determine who gets the support and who doesn't get the support of the COE? What will be the suite of offerings, right? What will be some of the core methods and frameworks that we will or we won't use? The center of expertise then often, you know, does really become the owner of, you know, those standards. What are the standard processes? What's the toolkit? How do we train and develop others who may need to use the toolkit, the org design, org effectiveness, team intervention, leadership assimilation, whatever it is? How are we going to make sure that we also build capability in others across the company to do some of that work? Professional services and solutions delivery, this idea of, you know, we are going to want to have people who are front lines delivering interventions to clients that need them. What is that work that we want to do? And so an example of this would be, you know, team dynamics, coaching and interventions, new leader assimilation workshops, doing an org design project or restructuring, right? Or, you know, delivering org design or org effectiveness education, right? To business leaders, to HR professionals, training others up in how to do the work. Transaction services. So depending again, how developed and how large your COE becomes and how expansive the remit is, how deep really you go into particularly this space of org effectiveness and org development. You know, you may have a knowledge management system that needs to be maintained. You may have collaboration sites. You may have a small group of folks who can actually answer questions about commonly used tools and templates. And, you know, there could be annual programs that are administered. You know, it's not unusual in an org effectiveness type of a COE that you could have that be the hub for, you know, organizational health checks, or elements of a human capital review. And so there's an administrative element to running those annual processes. And then, of course, you know, it's this idea too of saying, well, okay, if we believe that business partners, HR business partners, let's say, have a role in org design work, what do we see them doing? And it's not unusual. In fact, it's very common in a lot of the clients that I've worked with and internal COEs that I've developed to say, we really want that business partner, the HR business partner, to be on the front end of identifying and diagnosing an OD or OE problem. I don't need them to be expert at how to design the intervention or solution, but they need to know and be able to recognize a comp problem from an organization problem, just as an example. And we need their help of translating their business strategy into potential org design or org effectiveness proactive interventions. Like, hey, we know that we're going to go into a new market, or we're going to launch a new product line. What are the organizational implications of that? Them being able to translate business strategy into organizational priorities is important. And they may, in some companies, like Cargill's a great example, or PepsiCo, they actually have their HR business partner who actually spearheads and co-leads internal organization restructuring projects alongside of a business leader with an org design partner assigned to them, but they actually become accountable for the ultimate solution and results. So that's an example. So the takeaway here is all of the org design and effectiveness work doesn't necessarily sit in the COE.
Awesome.
Next slide. I'm going to turn it over to Dan to then talk about, okay, if all the work doesn't sit there, then we probably got people we got to work with.
Exactly. So thank you, Michelle. And I guess good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending where you sit in the world. But as Michelle and Brandon noted, Dan Lamp, I am based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and super excited to be here with you all today. So the next two pitfalls I'm going to talk about kind of together, because they really do go hand in hand. And so the first here being unaligned partners and a lack of executive sponsorship. And essentially the reason I group these together is because really you could kind of categorize this under a broader umbrella of stakeholder management, right? So understanding both who your critical partners are to be successful as a COE, and also to make sure you have the right level of executive oversight, sponsorship, and understanding to make sure you're actually operating at a level where you can be effective as an OD COE in, you know, enabling incremental improvement and the opportunity for growth within your enterprise. So the first topic here is really around your execution network. And I would say largely when we're talking about this group, we'd almost put that executive sponsorship aside and really think more about who am I dependent on for successfully supporting and leading key initiatives as it relates to org design and org effectiveness. And so the first question here, are there teams or people in the company doing work that is similar to the OD COE? And in my experience standing up the org design COE at Intuitive, it became really apparent to me very quickly that the answer to this was yes. There was an internal architecture team who, you know, not only worried about the nomenclature of and the syntax of the organization, but truly the internal organizational structure and understanding where teams intersected, to the extent where initially I thought, hey, maybe our work is so close that we should be one team. So establishing that connection, understanding the role they've played in the organization, how they've partnered with leaders, was incredibly helpful for me getting off the ground. But at the same time, you have some more obvious, you know, critical teams often organization design and effectiveness initiatives are driven through HR business partners. So making sure that those teams understand you and know who you are and what it is that you can do to support them in their efforts. And then, of course, more broadly, right, you might have a transformation office or a change management COE or a project management COE. All of those are going to be your real critical partners in crime, if you will, as you either are pulled into, you know, executive-led enterprise initiatives, or to make sure that if your HR business partners need help, they know how to contract with you and they understand the value that you can provide them. And I think, you know, point two here, will some individuals be threatened by your new COE? And, you know, I think that this will be very business to business, right? I mentioned we had an architecture team and he was thrilled to have an org design partner come in as somebody who he viewed as maybe being less technical and how they thought about organization structure and a little bit more holistic and business oriented. And so while that team is no longer a part of my organization, they were ultimately one of my first partners in getting up to speed on critical systems that we use for maintaining the infrastructure. They also really helped me to quickly get my arms around with how the organization was set up. And so we were able to shift that dynamic or sort of avoid that dynamic of feeling like, are we stepping on each other's turf? To sort of being very clear about where different accountabilities while related would lie between the two teams. To the third point, who do you think you'll need to collaborate closely with in order for the ODE, COE, and your practitioners to be successful? And, you know, I think we really hit this pretty head on with number three, but I think this is where you can start to maybe think a little bit more about your business relationships and growing that circle of folks who might be doing work that is similar to you, to also start thinking about how do we start to build the right relationships with the business leaders so they know that we're here. And I think this gets to Michelle's point is, you know, maybe that she made earlier related to a great testament of a successful COE is getting internal referrals, right? So as an HRBL or HR business partner brings you in to do some work, you know, does that turn into more work within that same business, within that same part of the business? Or, you know, word of mouth, does another COE see the work, another HRBP or even just HR leader see the work that you've done and start to pull you in? And how do you foster and, you know, nourish those relationships so that not only are you kind of keeping your internal network strong, but you're also building that brand that Michelle spoke to earlier. And of course, you know, number four is going to be directly contingent on that. So do you and your team have good and trusting relationship with these other teams? And so that would extend to your stakeholder partners, as well as your business stakeholders, those who you're likely contracting to do work with. And how are you establishing that trust? And I think that this also really highlights Michelle's earlier comment is positioning yourself as a functional expert, but also realizing that your business partners are going to be the experts in what they do. So how do you enter into a project, whether you're responsible for delivering it or if you're merely a team member, and make sure that your posture is one of collaboration, of, you know, kind of co-designing solutions where you have maybe a tested methodology or a tested set of frameworks that you know can help the business to answer their questions, but ultimately recognizing they need to be the ones to make the decisions and you're supporting them and evaluating, you know, the pros and the cons of those decisions and how the trade-offs of decisions will be managed through other design decisions they'll make down the road. And so that covers number five as well. So beyond your execution network, right, if these are the peers that you work with and maybe some of the key business leaders that you'll be supporting in doing design work, that sort of begs the question on how are you going to contract on the work that you're getting pulled into as an org design COE? And so, you know, this is almost feels a little bit like an outside in perspective as somebody who's formerly a consultant about the types of questions that we would always address upfront in a statement of work. So you're very clear on the outcomes. And this can be a bit more challenging internally, especially depending on the, you know, internal governance mechanisms and how decisions are really made within your company. But nevertheless, at least having as much of these questions aligned on upfront will really help you to manage your work and understand your role. So I'm going to look at number the first two here together, the client and the authority. So being very delineating between, you know, who is your day-to-day partner in the work, you know, assuming, let's say you're designing a new business unit because, you know, you're entering into a new geographic market. So you're going to have a new geographic business unit. You might have a senior executive who you're not meeting with on a weekly basis, who's ultimately going to be responsible for making the decisions associated with that design. And so you want to understand who that is, but you're also going to want to understand who is that point of contact, who is ultimately accountable with you for delivering the work, who's closer to the business, is going to bring that business lens to the work that you're leading. And I think, you know, that the other thing that's called out on that authority line is by what method is also really important. Again, you would hope there's going to be a clear decision maker. Not every organization operates that way. And so really understanding where is consensus needed, and how will those types of conversations be facilitated, and ultimately how will decisions be made is a really important thing to at least make sure that the, you know, senior leaders involved with the project are aligned on. The scope of the work, you know, so what we say here is what is a presenting problem or the business opportunity. And so this could be anything from saying, hey, we want to, you know, look at our marketing organization and figure out how do we, you know, maybe reconfigure our structural design in order to better support the business units or better support the geographies, or it could be something a lot smaller. You know, to Michelle's point, you could be doing something just around like leadership team effectiveness, and just making sure you know the scope of what that leader that who has the decision making authority wants you to address, because they might say things are out of bounds. You know, a lot of times executives have a purview far beyond what the org design COE team member will have. And so just sort of establishing those guidelines, those guardrails at the onset of the project will make sure that you're able to appropriately staff the project. You know, you might say, hey, I need a change partner because the scope of work doesn't extend beyond change for me, but you're going to need to do that work, you know, as part of this and immediately following for the actual transition to be successful. The project boundaries. So I think, you know, I just sort of hit on this as an expansion of the scope, just being really crisp on where the work should stop and start and what the leader is going to get out of it. So this might look like a set of deliverables. You know, we'll have a redesigned marketing structure. We'll have, you know, clearly identified the leadership role accountabilities and high level job profiles. And we will prioritize, you know, the top operating agreements that we need to put in place as part of this initial phase of the work, right? That's what the organization walks away with. And sort of that underpinning process of how you're going to execute that, right? So we more often than not, you know, use the five milestone model, which again is another method outlined by Amy Cates and Greg Kessler, but really has clear phases to the work. And even though those phases tend to be overlapping and, you know, continuous, it still gives you some anchor points as you're thinking about, as you know, when certain outcomes will be achieved and how we will build on those design decisions in subsequent phases of the work. Success measures. Michelle's already talked about this, so I won't belabor this point. You know, this could be about success measures for how quickly the work gets delivered. It could also just be what are some of the business outcomes we hope to see in 12, 18 months as a result of this work. We've already talked about deliverables. I think timeframes is a really important one. And somebody earlier asked the question about, you know, phases of work and how do you sort of determine your phases of work? And in my opinion, this is why having your list of offerings established upfront, as Michelle spoke to, is so critical, right? Because it's really hard to put a crisp time frame on something if what it is that you're accountable for isn't articulated. And so knowing where your work will start and stop and how that overlays into the sort of time parameters put in place by the client is really critical. We've hit milestones. roles. You know, this is really just getting now into good project governance, and you might have a project manager who's really more accountable for this, but understanding your role as a delivery leader versus a subject matter advisor whose, you know, role is more in a consulting advisory capacity than a delivery capacity, but also who you're working with, that daily contact, your project manager, your change management, how the extended leadership team will need to be involved at various parts in the project to be successful. Resources. And again, now I think we're getting into a little bit of, you know, thinking, maybe if you're coming in as a third party versus an internal COE, and constraints, you know, what's happening in the business that we need to be considerate of? Are we coming up, you know, on a heavy performance cycle where we know that the business's attention is going to be elsewhere? Do we know that there might be budgeting issues? Do we have leaders who are in the middle of launching something and don't have the capacity to support? So with that, I'm going to now kind of go to our final poll of the day. So if you think back to that first slide about your execution network, who do you consider to be your critical partners in your execution network as you think about your own COEs? I'll go ahead and open the Menti. Total rewards. Yeah, that's an interesting one. HR business partners, but total rewards, I think, is an exceptional call out, especially if you're doing true structural design, making sure you will understand the implications to role changes, exec sponsors, their peers and reports. Absolutely. You need to understand, you know, to that earlier point, who's making decisions, but also how are those decisions being cascaded? Change in HR BPs, I find to be my most critical partners, current in my current role. Business leaders, definitely. And I tend to sort of look at them, you know, again, more as my sponsors more often than not. But also, if you're trying to build an internal capability, bringing those business leaders along for the ride so they can start to understand the method, the approach, and why it's an effective way to approach org design. Executor team, HR change management work group, senior managers. Oh, corporate strategy. This is a really great one, especially if you're thinking about, you know, doing something at more of a business unit or enterprise level, right? Understanding the future as that's going to inform the capabilities that are important to the company, and how we organize to achieve those. VP plus levels. I would say that is, you know, for any transformational project, if you don't have the right level of leadership buy-in and alignment, you're kind of doomed to fail, right? And that I think is the importance of change management and having a true stakeholder engagement plan. Transformation management office, excuse me, functional leaders, process design. Yeah, that's a good one. You know, at Intuitive, we do have an internal team of green belts, who lead process and Kaizen workshops and sort of understanding when that work is more appropriate, right? Which might be at a detailed process design versus a more executive level business process design where OD would play a role in defining that high level process. All right, awesome. So I will move us along here. Our last topic is insufficient focus on activation. And, you know, I'm going to do my best to talk about this through two lenses. One through the lens of, hey, we're establishing a new COE. You know, the business has recognized the need for it. To Michelle's earlier point, we'll assume that it sits in HR. But I'm also going to try to look at it through the lens of, hey, this COE has existed, but has maybe not had the traction or the success that we hoped. How might we, you know, try to reframe things and get our own selves organized so that we can almost do something of a relaunch, if the COE has not had maybe initial success or the level of understanding and awareness as it needs to be successful. And that comes by way of a question from earlier, which I thought was a great question. So the way we've broken this out is into roughly 6 month segments. And the reason that we've done this is because there needs to be a gradual build as you think about this COE so that, you know, your house, your proverbial house is in order. And that way you can incrementally demonstrate value, that kind of sets the organization up for success longer term. So as you think about the first 6 months, we're really talking about planning, sponsorship, and starting to build some of that buy-in from your activation network and your key stakeholders. And I've added, or I have changed the color of the text under the key activities to pink and black. And to me, the pink sort of denotes maybe what you really need to tackle in the first 3 months. So there's a little bit of a sequencing here to these activities. But ultimately, right, if you're clear on the mission of the COE, the offerings that it will have, the role it plays in the organization, and you have the right level of executive sponsorship, and initially, if you sit in HR, that might just be the chief HR officer, right? You need that one executive who's really advocating for why the business needs this COE, where this COE will provide value both immediately in the short term, based on key initiatives that the organization is addressing, as well as long term, right? How does it sort of grow and sustain over time? And then a change management plan, right? And so this is where you're saying, hey, who are the critical people in my execution network? And how am I going to bring them in sooner than later? So that in the next 3 months, right, months kind of 4, 5, and 6, you can start to have some of those cursory conversations with your project managers and your HR business partners and your transformation office counterparts. And to Michelle's point, you're gonna want to go out and talk to the executives to understand their priorities, to understand what's keeping them up at night. And through those initial conversations, right, take the opportunity to talk a little bit about what the COE is intended to do and how and when they should leverage it. So that even if they're not a sponsor right away, you've laid some of that groundwork and initial understanding so that when they need an opportunity or when they do need support, they remember this conversation, they remember the way you've positioned the COE and are, less hesitant to bring you in, or maybe don't go, outside and sort of start with their internal resources first. And what I found to be, particularly compelling, especially with senior executives, is really quick wins. The first project I worked on internally at Intuitive wasn't necessarily specific to org design, a bit more of an org effectiveness project focused on return to office policy, but it gave me exposure immediately to our most senior leaders, and therefore some of that recognition of capability, what the COE can do, beyond what they might assume an org design COE does, and building that sort of foundational trust. And also giving me speaking points as I went out to start communicating that vision with the execution network. In the second half of the first year, right, we've got three key activities: training and resources. And this might look different again, organization to organization. If you're sitting in HR, a lot of times it makes sense to start with your HR business partners. And that, sort of that training and resources, it might not mean you're going away and actually building a program. It could be, on the job learning. Hey, we've got, I'm going to stick with marketing. Our HRBP has to do a marketing redesign. How do we build them a playbook and provide them the right level of support and coaching as they do that work so that the next time they're a bit more apt to be able to operate with more independence, right? Really building that internal capability. But also, if you're building resources, you need a way to disseminate them and to share them. And again, your audience for that initially might not be the entire enterprise. You might develop, certain resources that without context, without training, without experience, you don't want out there. And so there's an opportunity, right, if you're going to have a shared file or, leverage your internal site to share key resources. Who has access to those initially? What are going to be the most meaningful things to support the business? Is it a function design playbook? Is it truly just something on how to redesign processes at the executive level so that teams, who are unclear about how their work is getting done, have a tool and a template for documenting their key processes and where decisions are made? And then offer support and coaching, right? So if in the first 6 months you've been exposed maybe to one or two meaningful projects with the sponsorship of the CHRO, how do you now go and scale that a little bit based on the success that you've had? How are you leveraging that activation network to make sure you're getting pulled into the right work, the most valuable work, as it aligns to the sort of fact-finding you did at the beginning, with the executives to develop your offerings? And the only note here, right, is that training should be ongoing. So once you have really established maybe a foundational level with some of your key stakeholders, how do you continue to grow and deepen that? And that might be where something like a community of practice comes into play in the longer term. But at least initially, you want to make sure that, you know, once you've given people something, you can either continue to provide them with what's next so that they're deepening their expertise, or that you're making that resource available so that you can really, again, grow that base knowledge with a wider audience. And before I talk about the sort of the next two chunks of time, I want to quickly say, like, you know, if you're a year in and you feel like 2 years in and you're feeling like, wow, we haven't done all of this, you know, maybe this is sort of why we feel as though we're not having successful engagement with all of the business leaders that we'd like to. One of the biggest pieces of advice that I've learned in the last 2 years is, until your own house is in order, you can't go out and help other people get their house in order, right? So until you've really figured out what it is you do and how you operate, you don't want your brand to be out there. And if it is out there, the best way to change that brand or to bolster that brand is to really make it crisp, make it clear, and simplify it into a way that the business can understand. So Michelle and I have shared what I would consider largely very simple and straightforward frameworks that you might leverage in a roadshow, but you can always take those down another level just to make sure they're truly digestible for people who don't speak the org design language. And I think just sort of taking the time to know your offerings, to develop some critical tools, that's really going to be the thing that success sets you up for success if you are doing, you know, for lack of better terms, a relaunch. So then 12 to 18 months, this is really where you're saying, okay, we've established a COE, we've got some quick wins under our belt, we've started to build internal capability and provide, you know, critical stakeholders with a set of tools or a suite of tools. Now we're going to really think about, how do we scale this, right? So how does this maybe extend from being a fully centralized organization to an organization that has, you know, thought leader partners in various parts of the organization, or a formal community of practice where you make sure you're engaging business leaders from across various parts of the organization and not relying on that capability living specifically within your HR function, right? It's also your opportunity to make sure that you're growing that executive sponsorship so that leaders outside of HR know to pull you into bigger transformational efforts. And so you don't want this, this shouldn't be a big bang, right? This is, it should sort of happen with some level of incremental growth, and it should be thoughtful. So if you know there are parts of the business who are facing more strategic change, maybe you initiate some of that scale focus on that part of the organization first, versus maybe the tried, true, tested part of the organization who are really just operating at a, you know, at a clipping pace that they've been, that has been established for an extended period of time. And then in sort of, you know, 18 months plus, so you've set up, and, you know, candidly, this is where I am right now. Measure and track impact. This can come in a number of ways, right? Hopefully by 18 months, you've got a couple of projects under your belt, so you should be able to get direct feedback from the business about the quality and success of the work that you've supported. You can also get direct feedback from your peers in HR who have been engaged with you in the project work. And you might have established some very real business outcomes based on the work that you've supported. If in the first 6 months, you know, you helped to refine marketing, you should have established some marketing, you know, metrics that you're going to track in the long term to see, hey, did those changes actually take hold? Are we realizing the gains that we were hoping to through that redesign effort? And so you want that to be consistent and ongoing, right? It doesn't necessarily mean you have a dashboard, especially depending on the sophistication and size of your COE, but you should have some real, you know, tangible metrics that you can look back on to validate the sort of success of the COE and also inform how the COE should grow or shift and change over time. So just a few sort of things to consider here as you go out and think about standing up a COE. So first thing here is, you know, go slow to go fast. Those first few months might really feel like a lot of heads down work. And a lot of sort of one-off leadership conversations to inform that work. But having things cleanly and simply documented goes a really long way in helping leaders understand how and when to engage you, and sort of building that alignment that is so critical with your key stakeholders as well, or your activation partners, as well as with your executive sponsors, right? And by doing that and getting that right level of understanding of the sort of micro level of the COE, it will allow you to sort of accelerate into delivering work. Much more quickly as you get to sort of, month six plus. Facilitate change from day one. And this really goes back to some of the principles Michelle shared at the beginning about how the COE works, right? So COE is only successful if there's a demand for the work. And so knowing how and when to bring business partners into the design of this COE is really critical. Again, that might be your CHRO, but it also could be an SVP or VP sitting somewhere else in the organization who needs immediate help or who has expressed a lot of desire for organizational support, and sort of making sure that they feel like their fingerprints are in your offerings, in your approach, and that way you're sort of taking the cursory steps to align to the needs of the business. And then ensuring that ongoing executive sponsorship. So you can't just have a single sponsor and expect them to sort of power the COE to success. You have to continue to look to how do I elevate the COE to make sure it has the right level of brand recognition within the organization so that we're pulled into the right types of improvement projects or enterprise design projects to garner success. So I'm gonna, I think we're good, Michelle. Unless you have anything on final thoughts, I'm happy to move to questions.
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm good
Good.
to go to questions.
Okay, awesome. So with that, I don't know, have we been answering questions in chat or if anybody wants to come off mic, by all means.
Yeah, we've been answering some questions in
Okay.
chat.
There was a really good exchange in the chat. Jody asked a question around, I don't know that I would call it design, but sometimes these projects are used to implement ratios or other types of mechanisms that drive out costs in the organization. Could you comment a little bit about your experience on, do you allow the COE to be a mechanism for implementing ratios, or do you say that's not design? And there's probably an accounting firm that can do that for you. So how do you approach that?
Dan, you go first.
Yes, I mean, my perspective on rules, we'll say, related to spans and layers is that I look at spans and layers as a helpful tool for identifying opportunities or, places where we might want to look more closely if the spans or layers feel out of whack. So having external benchmarks, that are maybe industry specific, I think are helpful tools for saying, hey, this is where we want to go deeper. I don't necessarily believe implementing formal rules ever makes sense because there's so much nuance and business context that should first be understood before you really decide, hey, what is the right size for each organization? So that's the way I have always sort of leveraged those tools. And really recently, we've had a lot of, I'll say, focus on, efficiency from a financial perspective, but by having understanding those benchmarks, you're able to hone in on where is there maybe a big discrepancy from industry norms. But even the best benchmarks like Gartner benchmarks are purely, relying on input from companies who are willing to provide that information. So it always needs to be taken with a grain of salt, I guess, is my takeaway. But Michelle.
Yeah, I mean, what Dan said, but I'd say I'm not a huge fan of benchmarks or spans of control layer requirements. However, I do think a couple of things. I do think as a COE, it is important to have a point of view on how you maintain good hygiene and economics for your organization. Okay. And I think there are practical things that we do know, like as few layers as possible, right? Avoid as a general rule of thumb, avoid 1:1 and 1:2 relationships. Now, there will always be exceptions, but having some guidelines like that to say, what does a healthy organization look like? Knowing there'll be exceptions, but those can be really good guidelines for people to have top of mind. I think absolute benchmarks or targets about, you know, getting from 7 layers to 5 layers or increasing spans of control by 20% or whatever it is, tend to be more useful in my experience as they apply to a very specific project or very specific part of the organization. I think I used in this example with Jody, sort of a facetious example, you know, a commercial sales function, benchmarks and spans and layers all day long. There's lots of good data out there. But a legal function is not the same as a commercial sales function. So let's not try and apply spans of control and layer benchmarks, you know, universally to all areas of the organization. And in my mind, those are some best practices. They can be useful, but not used with gross generalities.
Perfect. Thank you.
I'm monitoring here the chat too. I don't think question. I do see a question. How do you think about how do you think about to charge an organization for setting up an internal COE as an external consultant? Oh, that's a really interesting question. Dan, do you want to take that one first? How would you go about charging a client for helping them set up an internal org design COE?
You know what, Michelle, I'm going to defer to you because I'm looking for the question. I'd like to read it before I answer. Sorry.
Okay. So, well, that's the question. It says, how do you think about, you know, how to charge a client? So typically, how I would do that is, I typically treat it as an internal org capability development project. So I tend to frame it a little more broadly, which is, okay, great. You want to develop an internal muscle on being really good at organization design or org transformation, maybe more broad than org design. Terrific. Let's talk about what the levers are for how we want to build that internal capability, of which helping them set up an org design COE may be part of the puzzle. Another part of the puzzle might be some education, right? So attending or participating in a day or a 2-day org design workshop, or doing some practical experiences where you take real scenarios, real projects that are happening in the company, and you provide some shadow coaching, or you create a toolkit for how to do that work consistently. So I'm saying that to say, yes, we can, you know, create a discrete project around developing a org design COE. What typically I do, though, is treat it as capability building and then think systematically about how do I help the client build this muscle inside and sustain it, of which I think a tactic is establishing an org design COE, just as an example.
Thank you. That's so helpful.
Marissa, is your hand up?
Yeah. Hi. I guess kind of more of a general question, but I don't know. Like, I worked in an HRBP office for like 1.5 years, and it was interesting, I think, that role, because like they're the liaison between HR and the business. And so it's kind of like seeing best of both worlds. But in the org design work, is the strategy of the org design project typically done by the people who are actually in the business units? And then is HR more so like the lever for executing that change? But like, is there a challenge about HR designing the work when they're not technically the ones doing the work? And is there ever that kind of struggle between, okay, who's actually calling the shots? Is it the HRBP? Is it the person in the business unit developing the strategy? Is the HRBP just designing it the way that the strategy person told them to design it? And I guess, how do you see all of that working together?
Well, Michelle, I love this question, so I'll respond initially. No, so Marissa, I would say in 85% of the org regardless as an external or internal consultant, 85% of the time I've gone in to do an org design project, you're always asking for the background documentation, right? What do you have about strategy? And most of the time, I'm thinking of a particular case that I just kind of finished where the organization needs to establish a new services arm based on some regulation from the FDA, right? And I said, well, what's the strategic plan for, what are the services? When will they be offered in different markets? And they're like, well, we have that. We have that. I'm like, let me see it. So what I have really found to be the role of, like, it could be the HRBP, it could be the org design COE often, is just helping them to articulate that strategic vision. They might have it, but until you put it on a page, you can really see, how are we actually planning to launch and grow over time. I find the McKinsey, the three-time horizon model to be a super effective, framing to say, where do we want to be in 6 to 12 months? What markets are we going to be in? What products are going to be offered there? What services are going to be offered there? Where do we want to be in, 3 to 5 years? Where do we want to be in 10 years plus? And by kind of getting that all on a page, now all of a sudden you've got, it's the business's decision, but the HRBP or the COE has sort of added immediate value to them because now they have a single slide that they can point to or a single reference they can point to really speak to their strategy. And then from there, it really gets into that co-creative approach that Michelle talked about, where you might help them evaluate the options as you think about structure or process or decision making. And the way I like to do that is say, here's three options. Here's the pros and cons as I understand it based on what I know about your business. But let's tear this apart, right? Like, let's look at these as a thought starter, and you as the business leaders who know how the business operates can really help take things to the next level of detail and ultimately be accountable for the design decisions you're making. Does that answer the question, Marissa?
Thank you. Yeah,
Okay.
no, just all the thoughts coming together. Thank you.
And Michelle, of course, if you want to add anything.
No, I think that was well said. I mean, I think I would maybe answer it in an additional perspective, maybe where I thought you were coming from the question, which is sort of what are the roles? And I do think it's important, as you're framing your COE and you're aligning very likely in the majority of cases with the HR, let's say the HR leadership team of the company about, well, what is our remit? What is our philosophy? Do business leaders make decisions about their organization design, or do HR leaders make decisions about the organization design? And those are actually, I think, some loftier questions that very much go to the ethos and the philosophy of how the company is run. There are some companies where HR has a very powerful role, and there are other companies where it has a very lowercase H role, HR role. And it sort of depends on that philosophy. Personally, I feel like the best HR leaders are HR business people who are expert in the business of human resources for the company. So it's not I'm not being clever, it's not a play on words, but it's saying like, hey, an HR leader is going to be part of establishing the business strategy. And if they're part of establishing the business strategy, then they should be knowledgeable in understanding what the HR organization talent implications of that strategy are. But that is also different than them being the final decision maker or helping a leader abdicate responsibility for making a decision about how that leader is going to organize their business to execute against their strategy. And I personally think that that's the role of a business leader, not HR or design COE. But that's my bias.
Yeah. No, I think it's like it is that bigger ethical question of like how much of a role should HR play? And it really does depend on the company, I think.
Well, we're at time. This has been an amazing response. Thank you everybody for coming and making this such an engaging session. And thank you, Michelle and Dan, for bringing such great content to the forum. I think Tanya has some closing remarks on how you can get even more value out of ODF and all of the efforts that are going into planning our conference in Denver.
Yep. Thank you, Brandon, Dan, and Michelle, very much for your time today. It was a great session. I will send out a message to everyone who registered to let you know when we have the recording and their deck posted on the website so you know where to find it at. And as Brandon mentioned, we are active in getting our 2025 conference all set. It'll be in downtown Denver, May, or I'm sorry, April 29th to May 1st, 2.5 days altogether. We usually have about 130 people and have sold out the last 2 years based on the space in the room. Michelle is one of our presenters. Brandon is also leading a pre-conference session, co-leading with Jody Goulden, who was on the call, an introduction to the practice of organization design. And Brandon is also doing, well, wait a minute, Brandon, that's the one you're doing, right? Yeah. And then Brandon is also presenting in the regular conference session, not as just a pre-conference. We also have an upcoming session. Marissa is leading second week in February. That's a virtual session on the economics of org design. So as we said, this is all community-led, and we look forward to seeing what else we can share to continue to develop the practice in the field of organization design. If anybody has any questions, I'll stay on the line to answer anything. Other words, keep an eye out. We'll be sending a email blast here this afternoon with some more updates about the conference. So look out for that. Other words, wish you all the best of day.
Thanks, Tanya. Thank you, everybody.
You. Bye-bye.